Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Over the past 3 years, Israeli troops have bounced from Jenin to Gaza to the Lebanese border, sometimes some of them even involved in Syria. The psychological bill is enormous. And according to the IDF personnel directorate, 54 soldiers have died by suicide since the Gaza war began in October 2023, already 3 to 4 times the pre-war annual average. Is this tragic spike to be expected? Is it unavoidable as a cost of relentless combat, or is there not enough support being given to the soldiers and to their families? Soren Kaplan is a clinical psychologist, and we've spoken to her before to talk about dealing with this type of trauma. Soren, a very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. From a population health view, does 54 suicides in the 2 years that we're talking about speak to a system failure?
Morning, Howard. Good to be with you. So I think that's absolutely on point. And I think that any rise in suicide rates in a society are absolutely grave cause for concern. And it doesn't have to qualify as a wave. I mean, the IDF are saying it doesn't constitute a wave, but it does constitute a spike. And we have to always take a preemptive approach when we're talking about psychological strain, because always patterns are warning signs and we have to see them as such. And I think that you're quite correct. We are paying an exorbitant price psychologically and emotionally for this multifunctional, multi-level and multi-frontal level of combat that we're seeing. And I think it definitely reflects this deeper crisis of psychological strain, the war trauma, and for sure, a system under the brink of collapse and pressure, where young people are carrying far more than we actually see. And, you know, some injuries are invisible to the eye, but they are very distinct and very much front of mind.
It's so interesting because you've just reminded me of a conversation I had when visiting Israel with a soldier who had been wounded, and we were just talking about his recovery, and he made such a fascinating comment to me. He said, "In a way, I'm lucky," and he used that word, "excuse me, because my injuries are visible. Many of my friends and colleagues are walking around with PTSD and a trauma that isn't seen. So when people see me, they automatically are being sympathetic. I'm treated with a certain level of kindness and even reverence. But somebody who has this injury that you're speaking about, which is a terrible trauma, it's not visible. And they're not awarded anything."
No, that's quite right. So we give a lot of gravitas to physical injury, and there's no accompanying shame with that. And we absolutely need to make space for the same to happen when it comes to emotional pain. Because for sure, the thing that we're seeing very palpably is that the levels of PTSD, that post-traumatic stress disorder, are through the roof. And I always say that when we talk about the war and Israel, that diagnostic category in and of itself is a misnomer. There's nothing post about it. There's only the trauma. And we know with this, it's kind of like a slow burn, Howard. It's very insidious, where PTSD manifests, where there is constant exposure to combat, high intensity zones, loss of comrades, the witnessing of horrifying scenes. And PTSD doesn't always show up right away, but it for sure quietly erodes sleep, functioning, and is completely decimating of hope. So it has this corrosive effect that sometimes we only pick up after the fact. And what we also know, talking about suicide rates, is that these suicides are rarely impulsive. They do appear as sudden, but when we dig a bit deeper and we do what's called a suicide autopsy, we see that these soldiers have been wrestling with prolonged struggle, feelings of despair, overwhelm, that hopelessness, the moral injury perhaps that they're sitting with.
Is it true at all? And I've heard this from many soldiers who say to me, and you're speaking about this word post, that we're not dealing with anything now because we're still in the middle of it. Is it a misnomer that they can't deal with some of this trauma, or that it's better not to deal with it until after this war has ended?
I think that's a grave mistake. I think that the silence around this, you know, the misnomer that, you know, heroes don't cry, the stigma that silences pain, where we see these young brains of soldiers, you know, the most at risk group, the profile of these potential suicides are typically between 18 and 24, where they're at a stage where identity is forming. And instead of exploring life, they're really navigating death and extreme pressure. And they're completely emotionally unequipped and often feel like they have no space to fall apart. Everything's on hold. There's a hiatus on their studies, on their relationships. So I think ignoring it or postponing it
is a huge problem.
Is a massive error.
I think just to add to the complication is reservists who are expected to be fathers and husbands the minute they get home, soldiers at, you know, in war, and they have this yo-yo environment, and there might not be space for them either to deal with some of the things that they are facing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that everybody's lives are completely under assault. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a compartmentalizing of now you're in a war zone and now you're a father or a grandfather. Mm-hmm. And I think the yo-yoing and dipping in and out of different extreme environments takes an enormous toll. And then I think there's also the kind of mental health stigma, you know, within a military culture that makes it very hard for reservists, soldiers across the board to actually say that they're not coping. I think in that kind of culture, vulnerability is often seen as weakness and for sure inhibits help seeking. So, you know, in Israel, Howard, you know very well that there's this sense of collective toughness, which is worn like a badge of honor, this myth of resilience.
Absolutely.
And I think it starts with the depathologizing of distress.
And that is where we have to leave it, unfortunately. Soren Kaplan, thank you for translating those very grim numbers into clear risk factors and perhaps crucial levers that we need to pull.